Okay, guys, we're live. This is the Future Gravy channel with Rod Rojas. And our guest today is Jameson Lopp. He's the infrastructure team lead at BitGo. Can you tell us a little bit more about yourself, Jameson?
Sure. So I've been interested in Bitcoin and crypto assets for a number of years and have been fortunate enough to be doing it full time for about 2.5 years now. And run a variety of meetup groups and online discussion groups, and have been doing a little bit of dabbling in open source. Have a few projects in this space. The first one that I really got up and running was Satoshi, which is a fork of Bitcoin Core, and is basically just providing a lot of metrics to give you some insight into like what's actually happening inside of a Bitcoin node on the network.
Excellent. Is there a GitHub repository that you would like to plug or invite people to check out?
Well, so you can see the main dashboards at statoshi.info. It's let's see. It's just Satoshi with an extra T.
Okay.
So it's like statoshi.info.
Okay, awesome. Awesome. So today we're going to be talking about the Lightning Network. Could you give us a rundown of what the Lightning Network is?
So basically a second layer network where we're trying to use some of the base level functionality of Bitcoin itself to then create ways of doing faster and higher speed, higher transaction volume interactions or transactions on this new network. So, you know, Bitcoin itself is fairly slow. You know, it can take anywhere from minutes to hours to actually get a transaction that is confirmed to the point that you're sure that it's not going to be reversed. And that makes it hard to do a lot of things like Internet of Things, micropayments, and even just like brick and mortar, retail transactions. Accepting unconfirmed transactions carries a whole set of new risks. And so these second layer networks kind of provide additional cryptographic guarantees that allow you to accept instant transactions. And then they also provide some new levels of scalability regarding transaction volume, simply because instead of doing a broadcast to the entire world of your transaction, you're only really sending the transaction information through a minimal set of network participants. So it's actually very much like the architecture of the internet itself, where the internet is generally considered to be comprised of this like seven layer stack of different hardware and software technologies. And at the very, very low level, it's doing broadcasting data to everyone on your local network. But if you were trying to scale that up to the internet as we know it today, that would never work. The reason that the internet as we know it today works is because we have lots of routing technologies that allow the data that you are sending and receiving to only go through a small set of other network participants.
Interesting. So a lot of people are scared of the off-chain part of the Lightning Network, but what you're saying is that actually we may be improving the security of the transactions by making them instant and not depending on confirmations. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yeah, so the people are scared of anything that's new, and they're tend to be scared of additional complexities. And actually, talking about the low level architecture of Lightning Network technology is even more difficult than talking about Bitcoin, because it is based upon Bitcoin, and now you have an additional set of game theory and cryptography that gets added on top of that. So you are, in a sense, you still have the same base security that the Bitcoin blockchain itself gives you, but you are using some additional locking and game theoretic transaction ability to then create these off-chain transactions. And so you're essentially creating data and swapping data with people in a very real-time and low latency fashion. But the data that you're swapping back and forth is all valid, like Bitcoin on-chain transaction data. It's just instead of broadcasting it out on the main Bitcoin network and putting it into the blockchain, you're only sending it back and forth between a few people that really care about it.
Sounds great. So basically, you're taking a regular Bitcoin transaction and making it do more things in between before it gets confirmed at the end.
Yeah, and so that, you know, we can still harness the same security of Bitcoin itself. We're not losing anything that you would normally have from doing traditional on-chain payments. We're just adding additional functionality that gives us some better speed and better scale.
Is it decentralized?
And that's a loaded question, because, you know, there is no black and white way to describe centralized versus decentralized. You know, it's always this matter of a spectrum, and then people will argue about, you know, whether it's on one end of the spectrum or the other. And it is especially hard to argue about this type of stuff, considering that the Lightning Network doesn't actually exist yet. So right. You're basically speculating, and the speculation that I basically settled on after doing a lot of research and ended up writing an article on CoinDesk a year or so ago was that it seems like the most likely topographical shape of a Lightning Network is going to be something that's called scale-free. And this means that it will have both centralized and decentralized aspects. And so, you know, yes, there likely will be some well-connected, well-capitalized nodes on the Lightning Network that have lots of channels coming into them, and they are, you know, handling a large amount of traffic. But that will be kind of like this tight cluster in the middle of the more well-connected part of the network. And then you'll kind of see this mesh, you know, expanding out from that of slightly less well-connected nodes. And then at the very edges of it will just be, you know, single participants here and there that are only connecting at one or two places into the network. So I think it will be both centralized and decentralized, you know, depending upon how you're looking at it. And of course, we want it to be as decentralized as possible, just to make it more robust against different types of failures.
If I made a comparison to our viewers, let me know if you think that would be a good comparison. Could it be said, like, for example, email, where you have a few participants that are very dominant, like Google and Hotmail and so on, but at any time you can roll up your own email server, you can choose to patronize, you know, a privacy-centric email. Like, you have all those options, but you still have market dominance.
Yes, that's, I think, a very good metaphor. It's probably going to look something like that.
Okay, awesome. And so there's no possibility that we know of a monopoly, of somebody just taking over the entire thing. You can always roll up your own hub, your own Lightning Network node. Nobody can prevent you from doing so, right?
Yeah, I mean, it would be very hard to maintain a monopoly on a permissionless network where anyone else can join the network and compete. And so, you know, basically, I think the reason why someone would, of course, want a monopoly is so that they can then control the fees and you know, control the flows of data and money on the network. And as soon as someone got to the point that they were able to raise the fees, then that's going to create an environment where, you know, competition can come in and undercut. And so, I think there will be a natural free market equilibrium there. There are going to be costs to running a Lightning Network node that is routing money. You are going to be putting capital at risk. It's going to be, online and potentially hackable. And then the potential payoffs is that you will be able to collect tiny transaction fees that should add up over time if you're able to do high transaction volumes.
I'll touch on that later, on the node running and why you need to have Bitcoins in order to run a hub and so on. But for now, how high a volume of transactions can we have on the Lightning Network? I mean, are there limits?
It also depends on, what you are considering a transaction. So within the context of a single payment channel, you can update the state of single payment channel, and you're basically only going to be limited by the latency of your network connection between those two participants. So you could theoretically be updating the payment channel like every few milliseconds. If you want to look at a sort of naive way of saying, this is the theoretical limit of transaction volume. On the other hand, there will be limitations in terms of liquidity. There may be times at which you want to send so much value that you may not be able to find a route through the network. That's going to be one of the challenges to building out this network. And there are...
Especially at the beginning, right?
Oh, yeah. At the beginning, most of the payment channels, I think, are going to be very small in value simply because we don't want anybody to risk too much money while it's still in an experimental phase. But then on the other hand, if you're looking at more of a macro view of the network, the payment channels are not necessarily going to be able to be sustained forever because the act of taking fees when you're routing payments kind of degrades the payment channel, and that fee that you're taking is no longer available for being routed around the network. So, eventually payment channels will be closed out, on-chain transaction will be created, but then they may be immediately reopened as well if that person just wants to reinvest, their profits back into routing more liquidity around the network.
When you're talking about losing money, you're talking about the Lightning Network node operators, right? Not the actual consumer.
Right, right. So, it's as the node operator is taking fees while they're routing the payments. My understanding is that those fees cannot then be routed on. They're basically holding them onto their end of the payment channel, and eventually will have to close and reopen the channel.
I see. Great. How low is the cost of transactions expected to be? Has anybody made any calculations?
So the kind of crazy thing from the research that I did and just talking to the Lightning developers is that there's actually going to be a range of fees, and in some cases they actually may be negative fees. So,
wow.
So suffice to say that I think in general they're going to be extremely low. Whether that means it's just like a few satoshis or 100 satoshis, I think that one of the differences that you will see right off the bat is that the fees will probably not be based on the same type of mechanism that we see in Bitcoin, where a Bitcoin transaction fee, you're basically bidding for block space. Like, that's the limited resource. So you end up paying fees that are related to the data size of your transaction. That's not really the case on Lightning Network. There is no scarce space other than, I guess, bandwidth, but the bandwidth use is going to be negligible. So the fees are probably either
sorry, Jameson.
Network and decide.
Sorry, Jameson. I think we dropped a few packets there, and we lost you.
Okay. So suffice to say that the fee situation is going to be different from what you see in Bitcoin. They're probably either going to be flat fees of like so many satoshis for doing a single channel update, or maybe really, really, really low percentage of value fees. But like I said, with the negative fee situation, if there are cases where payment channels are incredibly unbalanced, then it would make sense for a node operator to actually offer a negative fee if you are able to rebalance the channel, because you will be saving the node operator money by preventing them from having to do the on-chain transaction, which is going to have a much higher fee.
So basically, an unbalanced node would be a node that is only sending transactions in one direction as opposed to having bidirectional activity. Is that right?
Yeah, you know, wherever they've had a lot more activity in one direction on the channels than the other.
Right. So basically, you would have a monetary imbalance towards one side that would force you to eventually settle the transaction on chain, which is the expensive part, right?
Yeah.
And to avoid this settlement and to keep that channel running, sometimes the node operators might be incentivized to give out free transactions or negative transaction fees in order to even out the other side of their channel.
Exactly. And that's assuming that they don't have other channels open where they could, you know, rebalance themselves. It gets the potential operations theory gets pretty complicated, but there could also be cases where if you have a very well-connected node with lots of channels, then you might just be sending out of one and putting it back into another, basically routing around back into yourself.
I see. And people are concerned that there won't be enough on-chain fees for miners. Is that a reasonable concern?
So I think the concerns here are overblown for a few reasons, one of which is that miners are actually some of the most well-capitalized people in the industry. And if for some reason miners were no longer able to make a lot of money by mining blocks, which I highly doubt, they could always take some of the Bitcoins that they have accrued and actually use them to start running Lightning nodes and making more money by competing on the Lightning network. But apart from that, the major things are that, like we said, payment channels cannot stay open indefinitely, so they will have to close them out, which means they will have to make on-chain transactions and they will have to pay fees for those on-chain transactions. Then the speculation basically comes down to how does that fee situation work? And I think that it'll basically be like a trickle down type of effect. So if we think about this network, like what would happen if Lightning Network really becomes extremely popular, then from a user point of view, if the Lightning Network allows you to reduce your on-chain transactions by a factor of X, say like 100, then it makes economic sense for a user to be willing to pay any fee that is less than the average on-chain transaction fee times X minus the average Lightning transaction fee times X. So as a result, I think you'll see that within that differential, that with a popular network, the on-chain transaction fees could actually go up significantly. Because if you're saving, 100 times of your fees by doing all this stuff on the Lightning network, then you would be more than happy to pay, 2x or 3x, multiple times more in on-chain transaction fees than you were before the Lightning network even existed.
Because so, you can do so much more on Lightning that it would be worth it.
Yeah. So essentially it's, Lightning network creating a lot of utility, creating a lot of value. And as a result, the base layer, the blockchain, also becomes more valuable. So, I think it's a win-win situation for everybody.
And ultimately, miners can refuse to put a transaction into a block if it doesn't have a fee. Am I right? So there could be a competition there.
Oh yeah, I mean, miners can always choose any number of attributes of, you know, what type of transactions they want to put into blocks.
Another concern of people is they think, do I have to open a channel with everybody, with my friends or things like that? I think people have not really understood the routing system, how things will hop, how transactions will hop. Can you explain a little bit?
So I think you'll probably see like the average wallet, you know, under the hood, it should be doing this, you know, without the user needing to worry about it. But I would expect the average wallet will probably open like 3 or 4 payment channels. That should be plenty. Once you, you know, get connected to different parts of the network mesh, that you would then be able to find paths with sufficient liquidity to be able to route your money around. You definitely don't have to connect to the entire network or even, you know, 100 people. It's really going to come down to like what the distribution of the liquidity around the network looks like.
And it is conceivable that you could just connect to one very well-connected hub and that's it, right?
Yeah. And the main reasons that you would want to avoid that are just for redundancy, you know, because you can never be sure that any of those nodes out there are going to remain online indefinitely. You know, I think over time, various nodes will basically gain reputations for how reliable they are. But at least at first, you should basically assume that the other end of that payment channel might disappear. So you'll want to have, you know, multiple different liquidity paths that you can use.
And what you said just now, I think, is very important. So the user will probably not even know that this is happening. So could we expect that a Lightning wallet will look just like a regular wallet where you just send and nothing else?
Definitely. You know, I think that's one of the main goals that all of us who are working on software in this space should be going for, is the security aspects first, and then second, the usability aspects, where you want to push as much of the details and complexity under the hood as possible. Just provide a nice clean interface so that people can push a button and have things work.
Awesome. And the transactions would be instant.
That's right.
Excellent. Give me just a second. What does it mean that the payments are atomic?
So, you know, when you're doing an update of a channel, you know, basically you're creating your new Bitcoin. It is a Bitcoin transaction, which you are then using what's called the hash time lock contract, and basically encrypting this data that you're sending it only along a simple path between you and your final destination counterparty, which then receives that data and then sends message back along that path all the way to you. That is proving that they did receive your data and your money. And this entire process, you know, is able to happen in a matter of milliseconds, basically based upon the network latency. And so, you know, once your message has gone all the way and come back, then both of the parties now have new updated states of their payment channel at the same time. So that's really like the atomic aspect of it, where you're both updating your payment channel space.
Okay, so that has to do with the latency and the network, is that's what it is. Okay, thank you. And can users lose their money? Do they have to trust the node operators?
So the way that it's set up is that the intermediaries that are routing the money cannot actually take it. It has to the routed hash time like contract has to go all the way from the initial creator to the recipient, and then the initial creator gets kind of the acknowledgement that it went through before everybody updates their channel state. But in terms of like, can people lose money? That's where sort of the game theory aspects of this come into play. And it's one of the reasons why Lightning Network is a lot more complicated just to think about. But essentially, these transactions that are getting created and updated within the payment channel have a number of different like logical paths of what could happen, of you know what the recipients could be spending the outputs of the transactions. And they're using various things like time locks, using the check sequence verify functionality of a Bitcoin. And that basically allows you to, if your counterparty tries to close a transaction or close a payment channel and take, you know, money out of the payment channel, like using a previous state of the payment channel where they had more money at that time, then it is possible for you to then detect that by seeing that they spent that specific output and put it out on the main Bitcoin network. And then there is actually a another transaction that you can broadcast, which is called the breach remedy transaction, which basically says, no, I'm overriding you. Like, now that you tried to spend that and you were no longer allowed to do that, I can actually take that money back in a different transaction. And it gets kind of complicated, like the different logical branches of what could happen in a adversarial situation. But suffice to say that in a cooperative situation where both of the counterparties on the payment channel are cooperating with each other and doing the optimal set of steps back and forth, everything is really fast and is basically limited by network latency. If you get into some of the adversarial scenarios where someone is trying to steal money from another person, then basically things slow down a lot and you start having to basically drop back onto the Bitcoin blockchain and wait, you know, for confirmations to happen before you can be sure that your money is safe again.
So what you're saying is basically they cannot take your coins, but your coins, if there is some sort of an attack, you may have to wait.
Yeah. Like the worst case scenario is if your counterparty on the other end of the payment channel tries to steal money from you by broadcasting a no longer valid state and you're not paying attention for like several days, then they could steal money from you. So like one of the things that is required in order for the game theory of the Lightning Network to work is that you need to be listening for attempts of theft or fraud. And it doesn't even necessarily need to be you. Like, you can actually outsource this service to other entities and have them listen for those transactions on the network. But basically, someone has to be listening. You just have to be checking each other's work.
So, and this would be done automatically by the wallets, probably?
I imagine so, yeah. If it had to be a manual effort, then I don't think many people would do it.
Exactly. How about the use case scenario for point of sale terminals? Would this be compatible?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is really one of the first cases where point of sale actually becomes feasible. You know, we had some point of sale attempts in previous years, and those were trying to use, you know, sort of analytics of the network itself to try to guard against double spending, and they could get a pretty high degree of certainty, but it was never, you know, like cryptographically provable that an unconfirmed transaction received at point of sale would not be double spent. So this is actually providing much better security, I would say, for instant transactions at brick and mortar businesses.
And how about machine-to-machine payments like subscriptions and things like that?
Yeah, in fact, you know, sort of Internet of Things and machine-to-machine payments is one of the more interesting aspects, I guess, from an economic theory point of view of like we can actually unlock this entire new economy that never really existed before. And it's interesting to hear some people theorize about, you know, what that might look like. We have already seen some attempts at doing that with like 21 and their micropayment network, that it uses payment channels, but not Lightning Network yet, though I'm sure they will eventually add Lightning Network support. And we even see other entities with other technologies, like Hyperledger, I know, is very keen on Internet of Things interactions. And I've seen a number of talks from their folks about, you know, the type of like new economies that you can create where if, for example, you have millions of very dumb sensors, you know, situated around the world that are collecting data, where each individual sensor on its own is not particularly valuable. But once you figure out a way to, you know, combine them all and make that available in mass, such that you can sell data using, you know, smart contracts, essentially, you know, time-based or data-based contracts, then now you can have other machines that would like to ingest that data that can actually just go out onto the internet and, you know, basically look at what would be a new type of information market and buy the information that they want, ingest it, and if they like it, you know, set up a contract to continue buying it and whatnot. It's like the internet itself, where we managed to create a new way of communicating with each other, which has resulted in the creation of a great deal of value. And now we're instead building new types of networks that enable us to communicate economically with each other. So I think it's just unlocking more value that has just been laying dormant.
And part of this that you're talking about has to do with how small the transactions can be, right?
Yeah. And so, you know, if you're trying to sell data or access to something where you're basically metering it, the current payment networks, where, you know, they might have an overhead of 5 or 10 cents to do a transaction, that actually makes it infeasible to do transactions where the value is for something that is far less than a penny. And now that we get onto these new types of networks, actually the value of what you can be transacting can even be far below one Satoshi. You could basically subdivide it out to be as small as you want.
Interesting. So sub Satoshi transactions. That's very, very cool. Can channels stay open indefinitely, theoretically speaking?
Between two parties, you could do that. You mainly have to be worrying more about the fee situation, degrading channels of that are routing value. I think for a number of different reasons, including channel rebalancing stuff, the average channel is not going to stay open for that long. It'll be interesting to see how long they stay open. But I don't know. I would be surprised if channels are able to stay open for longer than like weeks or months at a time.
And is there anybody controlling Lightning? Like, there are conspiracy theories about Blockstream. Are there competing implementations?
Well, there are competing implementations on the same protocol. Last I checked, there were 5 or 6 different implementations, and only one of them is being developed by Blockstream developers. There's the Lightning team, which is Elizabeth Stark and Olalu and maybe a couple of other people. And then there's the Blockstream team with, I think, Christian Decker and Rusty Russell. And there are some European teams as well. And we've even got a developer at BitGo who is working on his own Lightning wallet. So I think there's, you know, more and more people are getting interested in the technology and creating their own open source projects. So there's not going to be, I think, any type of monopoly over the software or over the operations of the network.
That's excellent. And when we're using the Lightning Network, are we delegating ownership of our Bitcoins to anybody?
No, so it's completely non-custodial, and that's really the kind of magical part about the way that the hash time lock contracts allow you to like route this value securely through third parties. Like, you are routing it through third parties, but the third parties don't actually take custody of that money until the entire channel update has happened, until, you know, both of the ends of the sender and the receiver on the channel are satisfied with it.
Now, you're talking about routing payments hopping around. Now, can I prove to somebody that I made a payment, or can they say, oh, I never received it?
Yeah, so you can almost think of it as like the same way that low level internet packets are sent. When you're like opening a connection on the internet and you're sending some packets, you actually have to get a response back before you're going to send any more packets. And it's the same type of thing with the Lightning Network, where if you just try to send route some money across the network to somebody, and you don't get the correct response back that proves that they received the data, then you don't update your channel state, and you consider that, you know, a failed send, and then you might try to route around in a different way.
So even if we used an anonymizing technique, like a type of onion routing to obfuscate transactions, you would still have some sort of a proof that you made a payment.
Yeah, definitely. So each time that you make a payment and you update that channel state, you will keep track of some of the values that were used to update it. That is, you know, one of the additional things that's required of a Lightning wallet or a Lightning node, is that you do need to keep like a local copy of some of that data around. And that's, you know, slightly different from Bitcoin, where because you're broadcasting it all on the network and it's going into a block on everybody's computer, you don't necessarily have to keep redundant copies of it around.
Sounds great. Now, some people are saying that now with the Lightning Network, Bitcoin will no longer be peer-to-peer. My thoughts on that was that, you know, in the regular Bitcoin network, I'm not sending money straight to you. Like, it's going, the transactions are being, you know, put into the blocks by the miners. They're being relayed by the nodes, and SPV wallet operators are also involved. It is still peer to peer, but you have, you know, different participants participating in the maintenance of the running of the network. Is Lightning any different?
I would argue that Lightning is more peer-to-peer than what we're seeing currently in Bitcoin, where, you know, the vast majority of Bitcoin users are not using Bitcoin in a peer-to-peer way. They're probably using a centralized service like Coinbase or an exchange, and, you know, just using a web interface or using a mobile wallet that uses a centralized API. And, you know, only really the users that are running their own nodes or running a SPV client, I guess, would be considered to be using the peer-to-peer Bitcoin. You know, even you know, a lot of BitGo users, for example, are just using our API, and then they're basically, you know, relying upon our nodes to do the peer-to-peer aspects. There are ways where you can, you know, still be running your own Bitcoin node and using a centralized API, and then having that, you know, double check to make sure that you're not trusting anybody. But if you're using the Lightning Network, then you really are having to get onto the peer-to-peer network. Though I suspect there will still, that's if you're using a Lightning wallet, though there will be people who, I guess, unintentionally use the Lightning Network. For example, I expect that a lot of these exchanges will end up hopping onto the Lightning Network themselves. And so there will be users of centralized services that are doing stuff on the centralized service. And then the centralized service actually sends out transactions via the Lightning Network if it's deemed possible to do so.
Awesome. And another fear that people have is that their Bitcoins will be locked, you know, for a certain amount of time. Can a channel be closed at any time, or can you pull out sort of an agreement with a channel, with a hub?
Yeah, so kind of like we mentioned earlier, there are multiple paths for closing channels. There's the cooperative way of doing a channel closure, and then there's uncooperative, like fraudulent ways. But at any given time, if your counterparty of the channel is online and responding to you, then you can, you know, cooperatively close the channel instantly, and basically create that closing Bitcoin transaction that you broadcast out, and then you just have to wait for it to get confirmed on the network. But like regarding the sort of view of Bitcoins being locked into Lightning channels, there's two different ways where you can look at this. And one of them is that you're locking up your Bitcoins on the Lightning network. Another way of looking at it is you're freeing up your Bitcoins to be available on the Lightning network. In the early days, it will probably feel more like you're locking them up because there may not be as much value and utility, and the network effect of the Lightning network is probably going to be a lot smaller than Bitcoin itself. But eventually, if Lightning becomes as well accepted and as popular as we hope, then in fact the Lightning network should have greater utility and value, and so you'll actually be freeing up your Bitcoins to be more useful by putting them into payment channels.
And when you pull them out of Lightning, you'll be locking them up or putting them in cold storage or something like that.
Exactly.
Okay, cool. Now, talking about privacy a little bit, how will Lightning improve privacy? Specifically, we've seen that Chain Analysis is selling data to the IRS and things like that, and some people are concerned about that.
Yeah, so there will still be, the same type of on-chain privacy problems where, you will have services that are trying to analyze what's happening on-chain. There are, a couple different potential things we can speculate about is that, first of all, when you're doing a Lightning network transaction, you aren't telling the entire world about it. You're only telling a small subset of, maybe 3 to 5 to 10 users on the network. But even those hops along the network that are routing the money for you, they don't know the original destination, the origination and the final destination. Each hop that is routing money only knows the previous hop and the next hop. So that's where like the onion routing comes into play with, encrypting that data. But there will also be some new potential in terms of privacy for, cross chain atomic swaps. So if you could, do an atomic swap between Bitcoin and Monero or Zcash or Litecoin or whatever, then there's not really going to be any way that I'm aware of that a third party, like global surveillance actor, would be able to detect that unless they were the counterparty that was doing the swap with you. So I think there will be some interesting new technologies. We may even see, new types of mixers pop up, or new type of like atomic swap mixers pop up. It'll be interesting to see how it evolves.
So so for those viewers that don't know, an atomic swap is when you can change, like do a currency swap without an exchange, right?
Yes, it's completely cryptographic based swap without any third party required.
That's really exciting. And could that be done in the background? Like you just choose to patronize a privacy centric Lightning wallet, and your payments get routed, and obfuscated that way?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much you would want to automate the actual like atomic swaps across chains. I would think that in general, you, it would be more of a like one-time or occasional thing where you might want to swap into a cryptocurrency that has better privacy on chain, you know, potentially move around some there and then eventually come back to Bitcoin or whatever.
Cool. And how about, we briefly touched on it, but how about onion routing?
Yeah, so that's basically one of the strong privacy aspects that we're built into the low-level Lightning network.
So it's built in already?
Yeah, it's I think it's based upon Sphinx, if I recall correctly, which is this other like an onion routing protocol. And it's basically how we're, you know, encrypting the data inside of each transaction, and it's getting forwarded along that routed chain of nodes that is, you know, hop by hop, sending it closer to your final destination. But it's using some secret values so that along the way, you know, each hop only knows the one previous hop before and the next hop, but not like the entire full path of the chain itself. So much more harder for an actor that is like sitting on the network and trying to listen to data to be able to tell what the full flow of money is on the network.
And would this type of routing be potentially vulnerable to, like, I don't know if you remember that hack. I don't remember if it was the CIA or the FBI that owned a bunch of Tor nodes, and then they were able to unmask certain traffic.
So I don't think it would be as bad, because I think that the issue with Tor is that if you had enough exit nodes, then you could help. You could basically de-anonymize a lot of traffic, but because there isn't, you know, that really that concept of like entry into the network and exit from the network, I don't think that particular type of attack would be true. However, you know, if an attacker, I guess, was running like the vast majority of routing nodes on the network, then they could potentially start to, you know, figure out more of the paths by trying to, you know, fill in the gaps, I guess, of you know, the flow of money. But I think that would require running, you know, quite a few nodes, not just exit nodes, but basically like taking over the entire network.
I see. And you touched upon the atomic swaps. Does that mean that you could actually make payments in altcoins to third parties?
Yeah. I don't think that anyone has actually written that quite yet to be fully automated. We're still at the stage where a lot of the atomic swaps are, you know, being very manually constructed, but I think it's only a matter of time before we see that type of payment processor where I could, like, I know there are already some on-chain payment processors that accept like any altcoin and will, you know, automatically convert it for you. And I think, you know, Shapeshift may even do payment processing like that. And it would not be a stretch of the imagination for them or other payment processors to offer the same type of service, but through Lightning Network instead.
Cool. And in general, how far along in development are we? When can we expect to see a live Lightning wallet?
Yeah. Well, there are already live Lightning wallets on testnet, so we're pretty far along in that regard. I would expect that, you know, we'll start to see people playing around with them on the main network, you know, within the next few months. But then the real question is, you know, when is Lightning going to be ready for mainstream, you know, consumer day-to-day use? And that is a more difficult question to answer. From that perspective, I think it's very early. I would be surprised if, you know, Lightning Network is extremely popular and well-used you know, less in less than a year. You know, we're talking more along the like year, 2 year, you know, multi-year time frame, simply because we're building a new network and there's going to be problems and we're going to have to fix problems and just incrementally improve it until everyone is comfortable enough with both the cryptography and the game theory and the operational aspects of it that we're confident that it's a like production ready network.
Yeah, it seems like people want to hear a date, but it seems like it's going to be more of a gradual thing, just like with Bitcoin, right? That it was hard to use at the beginning, and then slowly things become easier to use. But there are already testnet wallets that we can use, right?
Yeah, and so you know, it'll be easy to make it work in the optimal scenarios, but it's the edge cases where, you know, you see, you know, hardware or software failures and being able to gracefully handle those failures. Like that's the hard part where I think most of the engineering effort will end up being is to make sure that we can have, you know, graceful degradation of the network and automatic maintenance to fix problems with the network. And so, you know, Bitcoin itself has not grown and matured on its own automatically. Like there has been a lot of engineering effort over the years to improve Bitcoin to get where we are today. And I know that a lot of people are dissatisfied with the current state of Bitcoin because of high fees or full blocks, slow confirmations, whatever. But if we had not had the massive amount of effort that had been put into it over the past few years, it would actually be a lot worse than it is right now. So we're going to see that same type of thing happen with Lightning Network, where, you know, over the years, more and more engineers managed to basically button up all of the edge cases to make sure that it's really a production quality, reliable network.
Well, I really hope that we end up having success problems like in Bitcoin. Like the problems that we're having in Bitcoin have to do with the success that it has had. So that's my personal preference, right? So now, when it comes to implementing the Lightning project, do we need consensus? Are we going to need any sort of Bitcoin network consensus into a soft fork or hard fork to achieve this?
Well, so it was using the payment channels on the Lightning Network were using various functionality like check sequence verify, lock time functionality, where that got activated over a year ago, I believe. And then the only thing that it was waiting on was for segregated witness to get activated so that we had the third-party transaction malleability fix. So at this time, all of the functionality that is required at the Bitcoin blockchain level is there. We don't need any more changes to Bitcoin itself in order for Lightning Network to function as intended.
Cool. And why would you need to have capital in like BTC in order to run a Lightning node?
Well, because essentially what you're doing is you are you're creating this channel that has a value at two different ends of the channel. And, you know, it can start out with zero at one end and a lot at the other end. But I think preferably you're going to want to see it more like a 50-50 weight. And then as you're making these transactions over time, what you're really doing is you're updating the channel and saying, I'm moving this amount of value over here, or I'm moving this amount of value back over here. And so all you're really doing is moving value back and forth between two different points. And this type of technology has been around since like 2011, I think, when it was implemented in Bitcoin J. And it's not that particularly interesting. But what's interesting about Lightning Network is it takes that low-level concept and then creates other channels that are connected. And so now you have this whole network of channels that are doing that same very simple updating back and forth, but in a way that you can say, update this and then update this and, you know, route it all the way around. So it's just a requirement at a very low level for the network to be able to have a flow of value.
I see. And how about, let's say that you have all your money in a Bitcoin wallet, in a Lightning wallet, and for some reason you need to make an on-chain transaction. Would there be a way with a third-party service to generate such a transaction where it settles actually on-chain?
Yeah, so there's multiple different things that you could do. I think the most obvious one would be that we'll probably see services where they will accept a Lightning payment and then create an on-chain transaction for you. They may, I could envision someone running a service that is well connected, accepts all kinds of Lightning transactions, and then creates like a bulk, many output on-chain transaction. And then they'll probably take a fee for the ability to do so. There's also more complicated ways that are more theoretical that I've only heard about recently, of ideas of ways that you might be able to shave off some value from the payment channel itself and create an on-chain transaction.
Would you need a certain level of trust, just like we do with Coinbase or Shapeshift or whatever, in order to achieve this?
So for the first one, I would say so, yes, because essentially what you would be doing is sending your money to a custodian and with the expectation that they would then create the on-chain transaction. With the second one, which is going to be more complicated, you would just be doing it yourself. So that would be trustless.
Cool. Well, Jameson, I don't know if there's anything else you wanted to add to this interview. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think there's a lot of misinformation about Lightning, and it's great that you have come on to clarify a lot of these things. Is there anything else you want to add?
No, I mean, it pretty much comes down to what we were just talking about of, this is an ongoing project. You hear a lot of, fear and, pessimistic worst case scenario type of situations that are highly speculative. But I think that like those of us who are going to be working on this technology are going to be aware of those worst case scenarios and actively working to prevent them from happening.
Sounds great. Well, again, thank you so much for participating. Take care.
My pleasure. Yeah. Bye.